Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Isles Beat. I am John Jordan. PD will be joining us shortly. I am pleased and honored and thrilled to be kicking things off tonight on the heels of an amazing Game 6 victory for the Islanders in double overtime for the second game in a row, putting them into the second round for the first time in 23 years. It is a wonderful evening, and I am over the moon about it. Joining me now, I believe, is that you, sir? Is BD?
It is I, the Swami.
Hello, sir.
It's BD. Howdy, folks.
I was kicking off a solo celebration. I wasn't sure just when you might be joining in with a little bit of a late start. I had a few things planned. I had a parade ready for myself, complete with an elephant and ticker tape on the heels of yesterday's momentous achievement.
That's great. But
now we can get back into our usual banter. Instead, I'll cancel my parade for now. But no, in all seriousness, I was just saying that it still seems a little surreal to me. That was some turn of events last night. I actually just watched the replay of the last-minute goal and the double overtime winner by Tavares a few minutes before I got set up here. And it made me smile ear to ear once again. So I'm riding high.
What do you mean? You're not disappointed that you're stuck with Jack Capuano?
We can talk about that later. I have I have put some heavy thought into my feelings on that matter, and I don't know. I may surprise some people, but I've got I'm hedging my opinion just a little bit.
Yeah, it was a very interesting game. I thought the Islanders played one of their better, especially in the overtime, where they really seemed to take over. You know, we have seen over the course of the season in overtime situations where that seems to be a strength of theirs. Part of it is probably their conditioning. The other part is, a little bit of rising to the occasion. You know, we can talk about whatever flaws they have that got there, and I've seen some fans focus on it. You have to, you know, as I put on Twitter last night and today, if you've been complaining that there has not been any results, you can't complain that there hasn't been a result. The fact is that 200 point plus seasons in a row, and you know, last season disappointing. Not able to get past the first round, and not able to, you know, even compete, and really take advantage in a game seven versus the Capitals. And here we have versus Florida in a little bit of an up and down year. And everybody was not really voting for the Islanders to even get past Florida, which was a little bit surprising because, you know, the Islanders have actually shown ability to take out, you know, they may not be able to take out the elite teams except for maybe, you know, one out of three or one out of two times, but they have shown ability with those middle tier teams to take over. and win. And we saw that here. That it was, you know, these were very close games, but they really put the pressure on. And we can talk about, oh, they were always behind. But guess what? Who won four times? They did. You know, you can try to pin it negatively, but you can't. And that's the fact. And they are able to break on through to the second round. And that's a big deal.
Boy, as a little subculture, we really do well with spinning things in the negative manner, don't we? I'm certainly a part of that myself. I have my culpability there as well. Especially mid game. It's funny. I usually harp. One of the things I've always harped on Jack Capuano about was an inability to adjust. And I found myself in this series as a microcosm of the relationship or faux relationship between myself and Coach Capuano over the years, having a hard time adjusting myself. I, you know, through commentary on Twitter or even commentary with my dad, who I watched the game with on Friday, or friends texting throughout the game or whatever, being overly negative, and you know, that was a mirror image of most online fans, I would say. And you know, I had to make an adjustment at one point and say that I would stop talking mid game and see if things would turn around. I just felt like that was the right thing to do. But I also noticed at the same time, and you know, maybe I'm still a little bit I don't know, tired from two double overtime games in a row watching. I can't imagine how they feel after playing those marathons. My thoughts are a bit scattered, but I did notice, getting back to the coaching adjustments, that, you know, one thing I'll say for now is that you talk about results, right? Well, two games in a row, Alan Quine factored in on the overtime goals and the double overtime goals. That has to be, something something has to be mentioned about that. A late addition to the lineup late in the season. Yeah, a little bit out of necessity, having to rest some guys and calling them up, but he played well, and he's got some time on the first line. And then I noticed also last night that he looked a little bit out of sorts here and there. And I made comment before the third period that it might be time to kind of reunite the 51, 91, 21 unit. And that is exactly what happened for a good part of that period. So I actually felt like Capuano and staff did a pretty good job shuffling up the lines, especially accounting for some injuries, getting some momentum going. Nolan, it was time to kind of crank up the heat in terms of cooking up some offense. And, you know, in the end, like you said, you can't argue with the results. Three of the wins were in overtime, but you know what? Four wins equals four wins, and the series is over in six, just like I predicted it would be. Another thing that I'm quite proud of. We had it all along.
There you go. Yeah, no, and what was great, you could see in that overtime, and you could see that the Florida, in basically in both overtime situations, where the Islanders seemed to really be able to put the foot to the pedal and present more pressure. I thought Luongo played outstanding. You know, this was about chipping away, and finally getting through Luongo. And, you know, that was the bottom line. And then, of course, you know, it's done in the third period and also in OT by JT, which is the most important thing, because it's really, and really what dictated this series is, I said it in the beginning, and I think I said it in last time we had the show, that this is about your best players being your best players. And Jágr had 2 points for the series. And as I had cited, that he gets a little bit out-physicaled, and he can kind of, you know, he was trying. But, you know, that's when the age shows and, you know, the season. And, you know, JT put the pedal down and got the job done. And Thomas Greiss and Luongo, it ended up being, you know, a masterful goalie performance by both of them. And, you know, that's pretty amazing, because we were very concerned on how Thomas Greiss would be in when the occasion needed for him to step up. And lo and behold, somehow, you know, there was some, as I cited today on Twitter, if you looked at the course of the season, he had a great start of the season and probably a great, you know, what, two-thirds. But when Halakha went down and he got the constant starts, there was a clear drop-off in his play. That said, when it came time for the playoffs, he was able to rise and actually outdo some of his, you know, stats that were actually successful in the first part of the season. So he really stepped up, and that's fantastic. And that's really been him and JT have really been the difference. The supporting cast have been, you know, hit or miss depending on who they are, which we can go into a little bit later. But overall, it was good enough.
Yeah, I think you can't speak enough about the play of Thomas Greiss. And, you know, when he was needed and when the goaltender needed most, when you're in the playoffs and you're going into multiple overtime games, you know, he was fantastic. And just even especially in game six, to keep them in the game with just one goal against when they really were having a hard time kind of generating some offense. And Luongo was on top of his game, as you said, is no small feat. So he gets 1,000 kudos from me, absolutely. And I don't think something else that we'll touch on later, I'm sure, but I don't think you have any second thought about whether or not he's the guy moving into the next round. I'm sure we'll get to that. On top of that, and another thing that you kind of alluded to, you know, with three overtime games, two of them go into double overtime. Generally, I find that to be obviously a very nerve-wracking experience as a fan. Watching the Islanders in these overtime periods, and obviously the results were pretty much perfect, the end result anyway, I felt calm. I felt confident. I felt as though they were, even when they weren't controlling the play, they didn't lose any composure for the most part. And, you know, I think that's a result of having some experience in the postseason. But also, you know, that's a credit to the staff and to the players all collectively, for, you know, bearing down and getting the job done. And, it goes back to the point that's been made several times here already. You know, you can't argue with the end results here. All anybody wanted was a chance to get out of the first round and put that behind them once and for all, and they got that done. But the play in overtime, I thought, largely was fantastic. I mean, you have small individual examples of that. Obviously, you know, Greiss's stop on Barkov, the penalty shot in game five, huge.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of penalty kills, you know, a couple of close possible calls that could have gone the other way, but, you know, nobody losing their composure there. Some scrums after the whistle when, you know, things might be getting a little frustrating. And then I noticed, especially in game six, I thought the second overtime period was the first time I really saw some visible fatigue on the part of both teams. You know, when you see a guy that just really starts to look like he's dragging a little bit, or icing after icing all in a row. There were a few times when the Islanders iced the puck in the overtime period last night, one or both of the overtime periods last night, where you knew guys were seriously dragging ass. And at that point, all you have left is to dig deep down and get the job done and get the change and move on. I wanted to single out Travis Hamonic for pulling more than his load in one of those particular situations where you could tell that he was just gassed. But it took a battle in the corner and then, you know, chipping it up boards and getting it out, and you know, you just got to do it. And so they really they pulled together, and as up in the air as things were the last time we were on the air, we did say that, you know, we could very well get back on here on Monday, meaning tonight, and have a series that was all said and done and over with, and with the right team moving on to the next round. And lo and behold, look at that, they did it.
Yeah, and Letty and Hamonic did mucho time defensively, and obviously JT and KO and I think Franz also major time And, you know, that's what you want to depend on. And they still were able to get it done, even with them dragging. They're still able to finish it. You can't ask for anything more. The poise in overtime is something that is actually an attribute that they've had along all season. So it's something that they've been able to do and do consistently. Just like this season, they've not so much blown third, period leads. They actually tended to, unless they were in a slump, score more goals than the opponent in the third period. So, you know, they've shown some glimmers of this resiliency and being able to, when it matters, step up and, basically will it. And they have the talent to do it. And as I cited, you know, to some that have been negative on Capuano, if you're going to blame him for every negative, then you have to credit him for every positive. Otherwise, it's confirmation bias. You're biased, and therefore you cannot be objective over the whole situation. And the fact is they got past the first round, and part of that is coaching. Even though I almost pulled out what's left of my hair, that Ryan Strome was sitting, because analytically it made no sense whatsoever. And even heard from somebody on the Islanders who said, don't ask, I had just throwing hands up in the air. We can cite that and whatever, but the team rallied around and got the job done. And that's a testament to coaching as well. So, you know, is he the guy that's going to lead to the cup? We're not there yet. So, you know, this is still a discussion ongoing, but if we've been talking about growing and growing in the position and growing as a team through thick and thin, and this season has really been a lot of thick and thin, it's been a mixed bag this season. You know, it looks like the team was able to take that experience despite those flaws and overcome, and so has the coach. So wherever that partnership might lead, you have to stand and say, look, here's the result. You have 200-plus point seasons and now in the second year playoff, second round. So that those are clear results. And that might be difficult for some who have basically, you know, demonized. But the fact is you have to give and take. And we'll see when it comes for step three and step four, where they are then.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far into our conversation without making sure that we're kind of risking getting past something that's pretty obvious, but the performance of John Tavares was nothing short of phenomenal, in my opinion. Talking about, you know, just bearing down and getting it done, you know, he's obviously the guy that you look to do that. And no better time for that than with 54 friggin' seconds left in regulation and then once again in double overtime. And both goals in different ways, in fantastic fashion, in my opinion. I didn't realize on the game-tying goal last night that he had come directly from the bench to join the play there. I only saw that on the replay on one of the alternate angles, watching him hop over the boards and then really – you know, joining the play but having a nose for the net the whole time, you could almost see from a different perspective how the vision that he has of the play unfolding. It wasn't the puck wasn't laying there the entire time, but he saw that kind of unfolding right in front of him, and you could actually witness that. But to see him play it cool, drive the net, and then actually have the wherewithal to not just take a haphazard whack at it on his what would have been his backhand when Luongo's pad was still sort of in the area, and he certainly could have flubbed it more likely on his backhand than his forehand, but to actually corral the puck, go to his forehand, stay composed the whole time, talk about a composure, and tuck it in, that was absolutely amazing. I was totally thrilled with that. But as I also commented online, I don't care if he would have put it in off his rod. It would still have been one of the more clutch goals that I've seen in a really long time. So, but anyway, kept his composure, did what he had to do there, and took care of business in the overtime as well. And that one was also equally as phenomenal. The you know, getting his own rebound, beating two guys behind the net, and being able to complete the wraparound and tuck that one in. I mean, those things, I've got them taped. I'm going to probably watch those about 14 more times before the next series starts, and I'll be just as happy as I was when they first happened. So kudos to him. And also, I've always found that in the post-game interviews, he, you know, does his best not to give you the run-of-the-mill answers. Tries to say something from the heart or something with some value. And last night he made sure to, in several interviews, make sure that he made comments about the fans, and people appreciate that. That wasn't for me or you or anybody in particular, but, you know, people our age, older, even the younger generation that hasn't seen any Islander success, really. You know, it's nice to hear that sort of thing, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was great. And remember when they used to say that, especially when he was overanalyzed at the draft, it was 2009, that he couldn't skate.
Oh yeah.
Where I had to take one of his coaches and do an interview with him just to cite, is there a skating issue? And he was like, no, there's no skating issue.
Not
so
really.
In fact, he's underrated as a skater. So there, I was going through some of that stuff where they started to overanalyze, because the funny thing was, as I reported back then, DiPietro actually wanted Hedman, and I know that the scouts wanted Duchesne, and the Islanders still, you know, with their little system and whatever their analytics and whatever mechanics and mechanizations they have, they were able to pinpoint, no, JT's their guy, and never seemed to lose sight of that, and I think that was... You see it clearly.
Yeah, I think he's a great example of over-analysis from day one, and I think that's what happens when you have a player that's recognized as special from a very early age, right? I mean, they call it the Tavares rule in the Ontario Hockey League, the underage exception to be able to play at, I believe, 15 or was it even 14? Either way, it doesn't matter. The point remains. You start to try and pick apart, well, what are this kid's flaws? Well, you know, if at one point you could say that he wasn't the greatest skater, fine. But one thing that you weren't able to measure was the fact that he's always willing to put in the extra work. And he's gotten better every single season of his career in one way or another. I'm not just talking about point totals, obviously. But you see a guy that clearly has shown us now in the postseason time and again, he understands what it means to take it to the next level. He was already there. And now, when it comes time to shut the door on a team and close out a game, close out a series, down 1-0 late in the game like that, he takes over, ties the game, wins it in double overtime. That's all you can ask for. Interesting little anecdote, though, and I was talking about, you know, his composure, even with a microphone in front of his face and trying to give a genuine answer rather than the canned response. When and you mentioned them all by name. When Tavares and Hedman and Duchesne were going to go 1-2-3 in his draft year, I was still covering the Lightning down here, and Tampa actually brought in all three players and took them out, showed them around. They weren't, you know, it was up to the Islanders. They were, you know, they were, you know, they had to wait and see who the Islanders were going to take, and they were trying to play that coy. Many of us were hoping the Islanders would stick to what everybody believed was a foregone conclusion and take Tavares, as they ended up doing. But it was a little bit of a mystery for a little bit there, even if that was just smoke and mirrors. But they had all three players in here, and at 18 years old, as part of the media asking the three of them questions, they were all very well spoken. But I remember even then, John Tavares being well beyond his years in front of a room full of folks like that. And that comes sometimes with all the attention that he had already received to that point, being a high profile junior player. But I had a feeling right then that this guy was going to be just as good as advertised, and in more ways than just his on ice talent. But I can't say enough about him. Obviously I'm rambling on here, but on the heels of his most important game as a pro, I don't think that that should be a surprise to anyone. So we'll end the John Tavares portion of the show here shortly, but I wanted to make sure I got all that out there because you can't say enough about it.
And especially after a season where actually there was some non-elite play from him.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Still able to, you know, get over it. And we saw him rise actually before the season actually ended, where he was starting to get hot. Right at the, you know, you can erase a bad season or a lower season with putting it together when it counts the most. And that's what JT is doing right now. So, you know, he's an elite player who didn't have an elite year and is worked through it and started to get hot right before the season ended and took it right into the playoffs. And, you know, that's been the difference, and that's what's going to, you know, matter next is JT building on that, just as Grice needs to build on him stepping up and maybe even doing a little bit better. Because Bishop is no, you know, is another good goaltender. That's the thing about playoff teams. If they have a really good goaltender, you're looking at what could be very close games, and you know, could coin flip either way. And that's what happened with Florida, and that might what might happen next with Tampa. So the goalies matter, and best players playing as best as they can and rising up when it matters, what Jágr wasn't able to do. And I think in a couple of years, Barkov will be that guy for Florida. I think that, you can see the difference of what's needed and what gets you over the hump.
Well, they're over the first small hump, that's for sure, and into that second round and looking at the bracket before the playoffs began, you know, everybody wanted to talk about the Islanders quote unquote tanking in the last two games of the season, kind of set up being on the right side of the bracket. And I was kind of licking my chops at the prospect of getting past Florida and into the second round. And you guys, Jay was on with us and you guys were yelling at me because we didn't want to get to that point just yet. But we're there. And I believe that they're facing another relatively favorable matchup. I don't know how the numbers all add up, but I know how I know this doesn't matter a whole lot, but I know how I saw them play against them in the regular season. I get to see quite a bit of this Lightning team, which is not the same team that they were last season for a variety of reasons, most notably without their captain and best player in Steven Stamkos. But a few things I think work in the Islanders' favor. I think their team speed matches up well with Tampa's. I think their toughness, especially that fourth line, who I expect big things from in the series, can cause a lot of trouble for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I also think that there's an advantage that may or may not have been there previously, but the way things worked out sticks out to me. I didn't realize this up until today, but Thomas Grice played in all three games against the Lightning this season, in the regular season. And, you know, with Halak being out and Grice having the first round that he had, obviously now being the guy, man in the nets moving forward, I think that might end up being a little bit of an unspoken advantage. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but I'm confident moving into the second round. We can break that down in more detail as we move forward, but I really do like the matchup, and I was, you know, I was kind of hoping for this, and not just because I'll probably get to go to a game or two if I play my cards right.
There you go. No, it's the best matchup. Look, you have two offensive, high-powered offenses going against each other with the Capitals and Penguins. Let them smash each other to smithereens, and then worry about getting, you know, get past Tampa. But dodging both the Capitals and the Penguins is a big deal right now for a team that really needs to gain in confidence and, you know, has taken the next step. Tampa's no slouch. I do think they're a little bit better than Florida. It is an interesting matchup. I haven't, I need to talk to a couple people still, because they haven't even put their attention, because I mentioned it today and they're like, Tampa, I'll think about that tomorrow. So
the
Islanders haven't quite all gotten all their stuff in a row just yet.
But, I hope they're sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. But it'll be an interesting, you know, it's really down to, you know, Greiss has to be a better goaltender than Bishop. And I think that, you know, we can, despite that Greiss has seen Tampa a couple times successfully, and Bishop has not had such a good time with the Islanders this season, I kind of feel that that small sample gets kind of kicked out the door. This is the playoffs. It's a different situation, and for the most part, a different team for both of them. And I think that's going to be the difference. I also know that, you know, Bishop seems to be a little bit better, you know, than Luongo, is definitely in the save percentages, and Greiss. So Greiss, I think, needs to, you know, bring it up a bit. You know, and yes, it's certainly an advantage with Stamkos out, that JT can, you know, if the best players need to be the best player, then JT can take that and run. But, you know, I don't think Kucherov is no slouch, and I don't think, you know, they are getting scoring from him and Tyler Johnson. So they still have, you know, some guys that are stepping up and scoring. So, yes, it's something that might fit well with the Islanders in the matchup, but I don't know, and it's hard for me to say. I guess the most concerning thing that I have is can Greiss be as good, if not level, or better than Bishop? That's the question.
Yeah, he's certainly going to have to match up, but that's almost the exact series key that we were talking about at length prior to the Florida series, right? So we know he can.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, it's no different. I just feel that Bishop is a little bit better than Luongo.
Sure. Yeah. I agree at this stage of the career, absolutely. Although with that being said, and I don't want to look backwards too much, but I got to give Luongo his just due as well. Like I think you said that previously, but I thought he was fantastic for the most part, and he can hold his head high.
I think he carried Florida at times and kept them in it. In such, you know, some of those situations, a lesser goaltender, especially when the Islanders were putting up the heat, especially in the overtime, that would have happened much quicker. I thought that Luongo was the difference of why it kept on going and dragging and dragging.
Well, again, we're looking to move forward. By all indications, not only Steven Stamkos out, JT Brown doesn't appear to be ready for the Lightning, kind of a grinding forward, and also defenseman Anton Strahlman, who's still recovering from a fracture in his leg, from what I understand, is still not – probably won't be ready to start the series, but could be available at some point. So they're pretty banged up right now. Another thing that's been talked about a lot, and it's funny, it's a little silly, that the NHL won't officially announce a schedule for the next round while the first round is still going on. But if you look at the – and talking to people around here, and if you look at the arena schedules in both locations, people are whispering in my area here that game one is likely for Thursday. That's just a rumor right now, but it makes a lot of sense. There's an event here at the Emily Arena on Friday that I don't think would be canceled by any means. So I would say in all likelihood, you have a Thursday-Saturday start for games one and two. I'm wondering what time of day that Saturday game might be, because I believe that they still throw matinees out there in the second round sometimes, depending on, you know, what the network wants. I don't know, you know, how that plays to anyone's advantage or anything like that. I know that playing on Saturday plays to my disadvantage because I'm supposed to go friggin' camping this weekend, and that is a bit of a problem. So I was kind of hoping for a Sunday game too here in Tampa, but looking at the schedule at Barclays Center, I don't think that works out because you've got none other than Justin Bieber in the house on not only Wednesday but also on Thursday, which means that Monday, Tuesday, and Friday are the open dates in Brooklyn as the series progresses. I have a feeling that if it goes Thursday, Saturday here in Tampa, you might be looking at back-to-backs up there on Monday and Tuesday. Is that possible? Have you heard anything to that end?
No, but it's certainly feasible, especially thanks Barclays for their schedule. They're going to have to deal with it and just deal with it, how they're going to have to go. But it sounds about right, but let's see what they end up working out.
Yeah, again, if I have a vote, maybe we go early on Saturday, everybody, because I don't know if I'm going to have permission, as they say, to leave the family at the campground to go watch a game
You should have went glamping instead of camping. You heard about that?
I don't know.
Glamping is like fancy camping where you have like a log cabin or a special tent with all the accoutrements, like with the TV and electricity and all that other stuff. So you didn't plan it right.
To me, that sounds like getting a hotel. I'll figure out a way. There's always a way. I'll figure something out, but it's not about me. I was taking a peek at that, trying to figure out what the schedule might be like. And the only thing that really stood out, and one of the only reasons I really wanted to bring it up, was just to kind of give people a little bit of an idea as to what we think we're looking at here. But also, when I recognize that potential for a back-to-back, that always kind of takes things in a little bit of a different direction. And hey, who knows? Play your cards right. Maybe you come home up 2-0. There I go, getting ahead of myself again. Huh? You're supposed to bring me back from that, right?
Well, yeah. I'm actually hoping that they can avoid the back-to-back, but we'll see what happens. The interesting thing will be, I don't even know what to expect when they play Tampa. Will they once again be that team that kind of comes out a little bit flat, kind of not feeling it out? I don't know what to expect from these Islanders this season, especially after such a up and down season, and even playing to Florida's level when you've seen them play better and still be able to pull it out. And how are they going to come out versus Tampa? Do they come out strong with confidence and a little bit of swagger? Or do they come out the same way and tentative and everybody's screaming about Josh Bailey and everybody else because they need somebody to blame for them not feeling it out and for them to get through it? And I really don't know what to expect, and I think that nobody knows what to expect.
Well, we don't have to worry about Josh Bailey for a little bit anyway. Although I did feel like before he went down in game six, he was playing a little bit better. But that is the big question looking ahead. Do they get a huge lift from this win in round one for the first time in forever? And do they let that build some confidence? Do they find a new level of pregame jitters or nervousness in the second round for the first time for most of these guys? Or do they continue to do what we've grown accustomed to them doing, and that's kind of come out daydreaming just a little bit and playing catch up? I think against Tampa, a team that largely has been there before, that is a dangerous predicament to put yourself in. Florida, they were able to get away with it. They knew to stay composed, having some experience themselves, but playing from behind against the Lightning, I don't think is the right move. Sometimes that's a little bit out of your control, bad break here or there or whatever. I found it interesting that I was ranting and raving for the first five games about we haven't had a good start to any game in this series. Game six was certainly the right time to come out and have a good start, and they pretty much came out and dominated the first period, and then they found themselves down a goal anyway. So maybe that whole point is a little bit of overanalysis in and of itself. After all, it is a 60-minute game, and sometimes longer than that, as we found out in these last two. But it would be nice to see them dictate the pace from the start, especially as the road team. If they can get through the first 5 minutes in game one coming up in an arena here that is going to be loud and obnoxious from time to time, I might as well say. If they can get through those first 5 minutes, I think they'll be in good shape. And then maybe you pot the first goal and then you kind of impose your will. That's the key. It would be nice to see that. And I would hope that they would have something of a lift from a dramatic win in round one that could at least carry over a little bit into game one of the second series. But those things don't always happen that way.
I would think so, too, and I would be a little bit concerned if they don't. It's still something that that the Islanders brass are going to have to address in the off season, because this is the kind of thing that they should be able to take with them and, you know, have a little bit of a a little bit more confidence, a little bit more understanding about themselves. This is still a very young team. And take that and take it to Tampa and start to grind them the same way, and start to recognize the strengths that the Islanders bring to the table. I really hope that that is the case, because you see the potential there. If they're not, then you're going to see a lot of fans get frustrated again. We'll go through the whole thing. This, they're going to blame that. They're not, you know, the fact is there's some flaws and there's some things that still need to be addressed. Let's see what happens. But I stand with you on this. I think that they should go with that. They should be that. You know, they should be able to take it up a notch. And, there's only one way to find out, and that's what's great about the playoffs, is that we're there to do that.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. Uncharted waters for a lot of us, or long since previously charted waters, in my case anyway. I think that when you think about the Lightning right now, you're focusing in on Kucherov, Johnson first and foremost. You've got Jonathan Drouin is a kid to watch as well. A lot of people know about the dramatic ups and downs of his saga this season, but without Stamkos in the lineup and with some other injuries and this and that happening here and there, I think they are leaning on him a bit more, and so that might be another name to watch for the Lightning. I think one adjustment I'd like to see here that I touched on a bit in the first series is the fourth line, Cizikas, Martin, and Clutterbuck, kind of getting back a little bit to playing that physical game and really finishing every hit and imposing their will physically. They seem to do that to me a little bit more and a little bit more effectively in game six. And I think that's a key against the Lightning, beating up that defense a little bit, making sure some of the skill forwards on Tampa are a little bit hesitant about going into the corner, if at all possible. And still, of course, staying disciplined throughout, because it's we can't be spending too much time in the box against a potent Lightning team offensively. So a lot of ways to look at that, but we'll dig more deeply into that as things move on.
Yeah, now that the fourth line is going to be an important piece, and Clutterbuck especially. Grinding it out, and the leadership, and kind of doing what they've been doing. I see that our Broadway Jay is back on. We were going to try to have him on earlier, and he'll be on in a second. Hold on, Jay. Don't go anywhere. But we'll turn him on in a second. I do think that Clutterbuck is such an important part, and despite Nino was the better player in the trade, Clutterbuck has been very important for the Islanders, and that's going to have to continue in the Tampa series. But let's bring on Broadway Jay to give a little bit of his take on everything.
Yes,
you're
on.
Can
you guys hear me?
Yep.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
We're good.
Well, we're great. Let's not come on, play it up, man. We're fantastic, aren't we?
What a fucking game, huh? Holy shit. Amazing. I couldn't believe it, man. I was in 215, and the place went insane. What a night. I mean, I know you guys are probably all in the same boat. I just checked in. As you know, I was trying to put this baby to sleep, unsuccessfully, of course. And I mean, what a night. Wow. I just couldn't believe it. I was convinced they were going to lose. Like, I just felt it in my plums. Like, every inch of my body believes they were going to lose that game. What an amazing night. And the overtime, first overtime period was just terrific. And then for John to finish it like that in the second, just absolutely tremendous.
Well, that is
so what are you guys talking about? Yeah?
that's the Islander fan in you, feeling that you're gonna lose. That's, you know, that's just natural. It's the sky is falling at all times. Yeah, we were just sort of kind of getting into Tampa, just harping on a few things in kind of rapid fire fashion. I haven't looked too deeply at it. I'm just going by what I've observed of that team over the course of the year, and of course being down in this area, hearing about it nonstop. We've already got local radio hosts butchering the pronunciation of several of our players, and that's just something that I have to deal with. You guys won't so much, but hey, it's still amateur hour down here sometimes when it comes to hockey.
It's not just me.
No, it's not just you. Everybody knows that's part of your gimmick, though. You do it on purpose.
Yeah, right.
Well, I will say, I mean, Tampa is a pretty good team. You know, they had, I think they were 6 in the league in score adjusted Corsi, which is pretty good. Like 52%, you know, and remember the Islanders came in at sort of like just about 50. Now, despite that, I mean, the Islanders were handled quite a bit by Florida in terms of, I mean, if you guys watched the games, I know you did, you know, they won some of those games, probably shouldn't have. But I think, you know, the most important thing is who is the best team in the Atlantic Division? It's probably Florida. So to take down the best team first, I mean, I think that's a good place to start. So whatever you're facing, if you can beat Florida, you can beat Tampa. No question about it. You know, Tampa's not the same team without the best player that they have, Steven Stamkos. Are they still without Anton Stroman?
Yeah, they are. We touched on that earlier. He could come back at some point in the second round, but it doesn't look like he'd be ready to start the series.
Yeah, so that's two of their best players. I would say two of their best three players. So that's good for us. I mean, obviously, you know, you never want to be happy about injuries, but, you know, that's for us. Let's get real. Like, this is a good thing, you know?
Yeah, when you're facing them in the playoffs, you can be happy about an injury, at least when it's not our, you know, it's not like we did it.
Yeah, exactly. And is there any indication as to whether or not Anders Lee might come back for
I believe he's out for the entire season.
The entire playoffs, no matter what?
Yeah, I believe so, but I haven't heard anything different, but with a leg break like that, I don't know if that's going to...
Did they say it was a break? I mean, I thought it was
no,
just a
they
lower
don't
body
say anything.
Injury.
We all just,
who fucking knows,
well,
right?
yeah, who knows, but it didn't sound like he was going to come back. It seemed like he was out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's not good. Well, either way, you know, we do have a relatively healthy team. It doesn't feel like it, but, like, ultimately... Alan Quine sort of came in and picked up a spot. Basically picked up like a spot as a starter, like as if he'd been here all year, playing on the first line and playing well. So that's obviously a revelation. There are a couple guys that are probably should be out of the lineup. One of them, there's a guy who is out of the lineup who shouldn't be, and two guys who should be out of the lineup who are, and that's Nikolai Kuhlman and Josh Bailey, who were really bad that series. Really bad. I think maybe Kuhlman had a bit of a better game, but yesterday everyone had a better game. So, you know, I don't know that you get sort of a lot of brownie points for that. you know, like you got to do it for 7 games, right? We don't care all that much about one. I don't know. Has there been any update on John Bailey today? Is he coming back?
I believe that it sounds like he can come back soon, but he might not be ready for Thursday. I think that's the and I'm sure many fans are like, okay, good.
He was bad. He was really bad that whole series, which is unfortunate, you know. But I just want to say one thing about Josh Bailey because I want to make sure that anyone listening knows what I'm talking about Josh Bailey now. Like Josh Bailey, if you're sitting there at your computer desk typing away and you're saying, I've been right about Josh Bailey, or I've been telling you how bad Josh Bailey was since, you know, whatever year, or I used to think he was good and then I changed my mind last year. You're an idiot. You're stupid. You don't know anything about hockey. Stop, delete your Twitter account and give up. Stop watching hockey. Find something else to do. Because last season, Josh Bailey was excellent. He was an absolutely excellent player. He scored as many even strength points as Alexander Ovechkin. I mean, think about that. Now, is he the same player as I'm not saying he's Alexander Ovechkin. Of course he's not. Alexander Ovechkin brings something on special teams that is extraordinary. Josh Bailey doesn't do that for you, but this is still a very valuable player at a very good contract. This year was not the same Josh Bailey, and especially playoffs he has was just, that was six bad fucking games, or five and, you know, 10 minutes of a bad fucking game. I mean, that's not acceptable for a player like that. What's surprising about it is, you know, he was pretty good in the playoffs last year too. So you kind of thought maybe, I don't know, maybe he picks up his
game. Yeah, that it would turn it on. Yeah. You can erase a bad season easily. Or like we were talking before you came on about JT, you know, it was a very non-elite year for him. And yet he got hot right before the playoffs. And then, you know, he's playing an elite game when it matters. So it erases, it doesn't matter what the season was. It's where it matters most. But Bailey has not done that.
It leaves almost an understatement for how good John has been. I mean, yeah. I don't think I've ever – I mean, geez, I'm 34. I can't even remember seeing someone so look so good. Tim Thomas maybe, you know, in that – was that 11? At 11 playoffs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there for that. That was fantastic. But, yes, it's that type of – he's the – the engine between him and Grice, it's the engine and the, you know, the offense and the goalie are the most important pieces, and both of them are playing wonderfully when it matters, and it puts us in a very good situation versus Tampa.
Oh yeah, oh definitely, you know, and just talking about a little bit about John again, because I think like there's not enough words to describe like how amazing John's been in this playoff series. I mean, he's been unbelievably good. You know, that first line, they had not that a one-game sample matters, but since it was almost two games, and just as an interesting note, they had a 60% Corsi in that game, game six, that first line. I mean, that is ridiculous. I mean, like 40 events for it, even strength. That's a lot of events. These guys were on the ice for a lot of events. So, you know, I mean, that is all you could ever ask for, you know. I mean, geez, just to put that – like, and no one could do anything about him. There's no one that there's nothing Florida could do that could do something about this guy. And that is something I feel like we've never ever experienced. And maybe people who are, you know, a little older than me who, you know, maybe in their 20s when they're in the cup years and might have some frame of reference to that. But, you know, I mean, I was born in a cup year. So, you know, I don't know what that's like. I've never seen an Islander team or before I was an Islander fan, a Whaler team. Never saw a good Whaler team, but I never saw anybody where it was like that. Like where there just was nothing that could be done about this guy. And that's what's happening right now.
And and I think it's been that we haven't seen that probably since the dynasty. We've had good players like Ziggy Palfy. We've had, you know, Pat LaFontaine.
Stop.
Pierre Turgeon. What was that?
Turgeon.
I said stop there. There's the three. Stop there.
Yeah, and that's really all there you got. But but John Tavares is above that, and I think that we're starting to see, you know, the difference of what an elite player can do, and the will and the leadership and the growth, and I think we're starting to see that, you know, it doesn't matter that he didn't, you know, he almost won the scoring title last year, and this year it doesn't matter. Because in the playoffs is where it matters, and here he is taking over. And that's, you know, that's what you need. And that's what can make us go, you know, possibly pass round two. And
My God.
And if that happened, that would be fantastic, and everything else is gravy. I think anything else right now forward is gravy, but they are very capable, as I think we're all agreeing here, being able to dispatch Tampa, but they're also very capable to losing to Tampa because you don't know what the rest of the team is going
to
do.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to real quick. I mean, I don't mean to rush things. I know we have a hard stop at 9 tonight, or at least I do anyway, so I wanted to make sure he touched on a couple of quick things. Number one is, you know, when we first talked before the Florida series, Jay, I asked you what the analytics said about Islanders versus Florida, and we characterized it as a coin flip. And I think in a six-game series with two double overtimes and another one that went into overtime, it was exactly that. When you look at Tampa and the analytics, how they match up, I know what my pick is already. I know what this team can do. But two questions. Number one, I know we touched on just some overall numbers, but what does that look like? And number two, doesn't the fact that they don't have Stamkos have to be accounted for as far as that goes, and maybe adjust that number even more, or whatever that end result is?
I mean, yeah. How many? When did he go out? Do you think? Ballpark.
It was late. It was late in the season. Yeah. I don't know exactly. I'd have to look.
Tampa was a team that actually kind of got, like, they started out kind of bad, then they got better, and then they kind of got worse. They didn't really finish the season on a high note. Not that it was a low note, but they were at about less than 52% Corsi, so 51.5 in the last 20, 25 games. So they were a team that kind of got, like, they didn't come in, like, you know how Pittsburgh sort of came in at 56% and just beating everybody they could see. And you know that because you watched them. We saw that Saturday game. It was just dreadful.
It was wonderful.
What they just did to the New York Rangers.
Oh, that was wonderful. I had company. I had both Ranger brothers, Ranger fan brothers with me. And we watched that. It was fantastic. Stamkos has been out since March 31st.
Yeah, he missed the last five games.
All five games. All right, well, then that's not really enough time for us to get any idea of what we're dealing with. Yep. But I think that this is a team that's not as good as they appear to be if you look at the total season, Tampa, because they've lost key assets. They've lost two of their best three players. Obviously, Victor Hedman being the player that is also part of the top three. And then, Bishop is a very good player, of course. But goalies are there's such a thing as, like, your best goalie, like a best goalie who can carry you forever, like Carey Price and Henrik Lundqvist. And then there's sort of like a cut below that, which is all of your other really good goalies, which is what, Thomas Greiss right now is putting on a show, but, we know he's not able to do this for eternity, right? So at some point we're going to have to start getting more shots on net. And I mean, that's what we got. Not to say that, I think Bobby Lou had a better game than Greiss did yesterday, to be honest. Not that doesn't take anything away from the extraordinary performance by Thomas Greiss, but, Bobby Lou saved that game a couple times. And they almost won that game. But for, Johnny's heroics and, what I was going to say is that when you're a little bit below that, they're sort of all the goalies are kind of in a big sort of pile. And I think Bishop kind of in the same category right now. So I don't think that gives them any particular edge. I think the fact that we have basically a complete defense right now, short of Ryan Pulock, and let's be honest, Zdlyski was playing terrific. He played terrific when he was in.
Yeah.
So it surprised. Like, I don't think I ever thought that, like, defensive depth would be a strength of this team, because it seems like it was such a weakness for, like, decades, right? But it does feel now like they probably maybe should have gone. I remember I really wanted them to go get Patrick Weirkoch at the deadline. This guy I love, and Shane Prince, of course, I was happy with, but I still am. He's a really good player. And he's a player that you can build for. I'm sorry to be going on a tangent. You can build forward with him too, which is exactly what you should be doing at the deadline, unless you're at the very end of your window. That's the only time that you should be wasting future assets, big time future assets, to get short term players. Just look at the Rangers, who do that stupid shit every year. The Blackhawks didn't start doing it until recently. I sort of almost wish they'd gone out and gotten two forwards at the end of the day, because it does feel like we could use the help.
Well, you know.
Yeah, they can't always have everything.
Following the pattern of the previous round when Jay was on in the last minute here, you know what we have to do, fellas? And I'll start because I think
prediction time.
We did it last time. We got to do it again because we're superstitious people, or at least I am. So we're going to do this.
Okay.
I went with the Islanders in six against the Florida Panthers. That worked out very well. I really, truly believe that they match up quite well with the Lightning as they're currently constructed, with injuries accounted for and everything else. And I'm going to do it again. Islanders in six, and we're going to the Eastern Conference Final, boys. Who's next?
My fucking God. Well, I'll tell you. What did I have? Islanders in six also? Or did I have five?
I don't know.
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
That's true.
I know I had Islanders. I'll tell you that. Well, here's the thing. I think Florida's the best team in the Atlantic, and I think it's almost by a country mile. So I think they beat Florida. There's no reason they can't beat Tampa. I'm going to take Islanders in six again. You know what? Fuck it. Islanders in five. Fuck it.
There you go. BD, close us out, man.
He was going to take my surprise. I was hoping he was going to stick to six. I'm going to go with the Islanders start to realize and have a little bit more confidence and swagger, and are able to chip away. And I also think that the Islanders can do this in five. It's really contingent on a couple of things. But I don't see this as a series that they make go to seven. This is a five or six one, but I'll go with the five and hope that they're able to go and take it to the next level. because they have the type of players that are there, the leadership of Letty and Boychuk and Clutterbuck. These things matter.
Oh, yeah. Hey, one more. While we're watching this game here, what do you guys think, that Chicago wins this one or St. Louis? It'll foretell how smart we are.
Chicago.
I think Chicago's going to win this game. BD, what do you think?
Chicago's been in that situation, and St. Louis has all the pressure. And St. Louis had an opportunity this year to make some changes, and they didn't. And I think that's going to bite them in the ass.
They also had an opportunity to win this series. They didn't.
Well, that too. That too, but screw them all. St. Louis, they took the conservative route, and I think they're going to pay for it.
Screw them all, though. We're talking about the Islanders winning in the next round, just as they did in the first. And I'm going to be the jerk that ends this party early. Jay, thank you for joining us again. We'll do this possibly again next week. BD, I love you, buddy. We're still on cloud nine. Let's keep this train rolling. And I can't remember which sound bite to hit as we close it out, so feel free to do that for me.
I will do it. Not a problem. Thanks for coming
pleasure
on, Jay. And
yeah.
John, as always, great to do another show, and now we go further into the playoffs. Till next week, folks, you're listening to Isles Beat. Bye-bye.
See ya.